Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Artificial intelligence is reshaping how we learn, how we write, how we speak, and I think how we even think. Let's talk about that. Joining us is a Professor Bill Kohlbrenner. He's a professor of English at Bar-Ilan University. He's executive director of Writing on the Wall. A very good morning. Great to have you with us again. Let's just start with a little bit of an experiment that you did. Tell us about it.
Good morning, Howard. I haven't been to weddings recently, but I look forward to them now. And there's a challenge in every single context. And the recent news about students kind of gaming the system is more news about the teachers than it is about the students. Many, I think, middle career scholars who are really married to the current version of the academy find a very, very hard time understanding that the university, if it will survive, has to change significantly. And they're holding on to that nostalgic view of what it used to mean to be an English professor. One of my colleagues said to me, our students are not coming here to do AI, they're coming here to learn English literature. And that is 100% right. And many of my students have talked about the way they feel completely overwhelmed by social media and AI culture, and they are really want that authentic voice. With that said, Howard, when the moment comes, they will use AI to write their papers. They will, no matter how much they claim to dislike it, no matter how they claim to be resisting it, they will. So the story here, Howard, is not about the students. The story is about the teachers. The story is about teachers trying to find a way of negotiating the most incredible and terrifying technology that's been invented since the printing press and script. I mean, we're at the baby stages of it. Remember the internet in 1997? Does it look like anything like it does now?
Yeah.
So I have, with my younger career scholars who are innovating, tried to think of ways of getting my students to be accountable. So in a class on the Renaissance, English Renaissance, I would give them a variety of different texts and tell them to find a context to explain these texts. And let's say women in marriage and Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, for example. So they had to build up these contexts. But what I asked them to do is to take account of the times that they changed their mind, that they disagreed with AI, that they changed direction. And I have to tell you, Howard, everybody will tell you, oh, it's a shortcut, it's a shortcut. Anybody who uses AI seriously, a teacher or a student, is spending much, much more time. And what I do with my students, because this is the essential skill that we're teaching them, is not how to cut and paste from AI, but how to be critical in relationship to it. The machine can do everything. It works on augmentation, it works on probability, but it cannot choose, it cannot think. It cannot do the one thing that really is human. And no matter how successful these students may be overcoming the surveillance culture that our universities are more and more trying to put in place, no matter how much they are thriving in this context, apparently, they do not have the skills to survive AI. And you're right, Howard. The dangerous thing about AI is you just keep on nodding and saying, okay.
Yeah, sounds good. And
yeah, and it increasingly does sound good. You know, I spend part of the time that I spend with the students is in office hours, but I spend an entire class period doing one of the assignments or starting. And part of what you have to do when you're doing this is show irreverence. Because as you know, Howard, I know you use AI all the time. It makes crazy mistakes all the time. And you're like, dude, can you please get with the program? So even just that attitude or that affect, that lack of awe at this technology, or that it's not even a lack of awe. It's just saying, oh, this thing is it makes mistakes. And in a way, because it makes mistakes, I can really work with it. I mean, I don't know how many, I use AI to prepare for every single meeting, including this one. What can I expect? It helps me verbalize and think about some of, let's say, the anxieties or thoughts or hesitations that I have. I always come into meetings more relaxed because I feel like I'm prepared for them. So, going back to the question, Howard, what do we do in the current environment? We try as hard as we can to fight off a technology, which really is a tsunami. a tsunami of just white noise, which sounds good.
So in other words, what you're saying is use the way in which we have to shift our thinking and shift the approach is not to say, well, this whole AI thing, let's just keep away from it because it interferes with the purity of learning, but rather say, this is what's here. We need to, just as we critically analyze a Shakespearean text or Tanakh or anything else, so we've got to start looking at AI and view it not as the oracle and the, but rather just as another text that needs analysis and criticism.
Well, first of all, the people who are refusing, and you know, this is just performative way of giving up. It's a, because AI will be a tsunami. And the question really is, Howard, I think it's like a civilizational fight, actually. You know, and I you mentioned that I run the, I'm the executive director of Writing on the Wall, where we're fighting anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, why are you doing both of those things? And to me, they're very parallel. They're parallel in the sense that it's a fight, it's a struggle for voice. We are struggling to keep our own voices, you know, and these assignments that the kids did, some of them used AI-generated voiceover. They have bad accents, they're Russian, they're Arab, or whatever. But the ones that, as you said, were that they spoke themselves, the voiceover, and you heard them. You know, I have to tell you, Howard, some of these assignments that I'm getting are better than I've ever gotten. They are MA level in BA classes. All of a sudden, students are like talking about works of literature that they love in ways that is more manageable for them. It's a cool experiment. But as I said, you know, where it's a losing battle. It's a losing battle. As you said, we have to, but it's not just another tool, Howard. It's not just a Shakespeare play. It really is. It kind of comes in and it colonizes your mind. It does. You know, and I'm a very critical user of AI. And sometimes I just say, you know, not that I never talk about my personal issues. I think people should not do that. But, you know, I just have to step away because I think I need to feel my brain a little bit now.
Absolutely. Because, not only does it give you everything in a very manageable package size, but then it also determines the next steps of your journey and says, now I can do this for you. And you say, it's so much easier to say yes than to say no. Actually, I would want to go in that other direction. So it becomes very, very instructive.
So the metric that I really used for those decision questions is that pivot question. And almost 70% of the students did pivot. And the ones who did much better assignments because it's a process of taking a technology which says you don't have a voice and saying, no, this is my own. I'm crafting this. I'm making it. And as you said, you know, AI, ChatGPT-4, you waited for the next, you gave the next question. But now it crafts these elegant questions. How could you say no?
Absolutely,
sure, go
because
for it
sounds so good. Very, very interesting, and certainly something that I would hope most educators are going to start looking at very, very critically, because we do need to find a way to engage it and to really empower ourselves and, of course, the next generations. Professor Bill Kohlbrenner, thank you. As always, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom.